tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Our first 24 hours together. I doubt if it's easy for most of you. And I think it's always important to remember this is a difficult thing to do. So if you're finding it difficult, you're right on track. And as these folk that I was speaking to Tuesday here, they found it quite impressive that we would take on such a thing as just being with our own minds for 10 days. So I'd like to just maybe, first of all, consider self-respect, because respect is a very important part of understanding anyone. So in understanding yourself, there has to be self-respect, doesn't there? You have to have a sense of kindness, self-respect. And so often we are driven by our critical minds and our idealized minds about how we should be, that we forget how much goodness there already is. Now there's a difference between self-respect and self-promotion. And there's a difference between self-promotion and self-disparagement. And there's a difference between self-promotion and self-effacement. So there's different words that we use to consider these things. But self-respect is remembering the very real goodness that does exist in our lives. So just on this retreat, the level of morality that we're living at is worthy of respect. You may not remember that. You may not, you may just be sort of caught up with, oh, I can't even see my breath for two breaths. Maybe that's where your mind goes, which might be true also. But there is also that we are living a very moral life right now. You might think, well, yeah, last week I had two whiskeys, or I ate three pizzas or whatever, but that was last week. Yeah, maybe it's mid-year, I don't know. But right now, we are living morally. We are doing that, and that's true. That's not self-promotion, it's an aspect of our effort here which is worthy of respect. In the chanting on the Sangha, we have Anjali Karaniyo, Ahunayo Pahunayo Dakinayo Anjali Karaniyo, worthy of respect. So these sometimes we take this dualistically and we think the Sangha is a body of people who are kind of out there. True. But also the Sangha is something about our own way of living our lives. So this is worthy of respect, living morally. That we're living at quite a high level of renunciation, which is the change we all have gone through from the sense distractions that we've been involved in. Perhaps it's a relief. It's a relief, but still there's no usual things that you find entertaining or rewarding or whatever, they're not there now. So there's quite a high level of renunciation. And that's Anjali Karaniyo. Anjali is this gesture. So you're kind of going to learn to do this for yourself. And it's not being sentimental. It's not being smarmy. It is kind of trying to find a balance to the critical faculty which we need to use, because we need to see cause and effect, but not let the critical faculty become self-disparagement, which doesn't, you know, it just gets too heavy, too difficult. So we want to see cause and effect. We are aspiring to the spiritual depth in our life, but we've got work to do. So self-respect helps to create that balance. We're living by a very rigorous schedule. It really is, isn't it? I mean, it's a lot of sitting and walking, and it's hard on the body. More and more people are in chairs back there, I notice. And even sitting in a chair for an hour, that's not easy. That's not easy at all. So that's worthy of respect. So maybe, you know, like I know people who make the move from benches to chairs sometimes feel, oh, I'm wimping out. But that's not, I mean, that's again the self-disparagement, isn't it? Because of some idealized image about my knees. But if my knees are 60 plus years old and they hurt, well, maybe it's appropriate to sit in a chair, but I'm still here. And that's worthy of respect. There's just the change from, you know, from the change from being busy to being quiet. That's quite hard to do. Not talking, not distracting. Maybe you miss some close friends of yours, someone who you have a great affection for. So you feel a sense of loneliness and you work with that, and so on and so forth. So there is a lot to be worthy of respect, and to somehow bring that forth, to remember the goodness of one's life, helps in the work that we're involved in. Then we can use the critical faculty skillfully. We can use it in a way which is according to Dhamma rather than this kind of judging and nitpicking and criticizing that it is not really, and it's not really reflected. It's more just being heavy with yourself. The bottom line then of our practice is present moment awareness. And if you sometimes wonder what are we doing here? What is the point of all this? Remember, that's always the bottom line. And in our reflections on the Dharma, santitiko, apparent here and now, akaliko, timeless, ehipasiko, encouraging investigation, openaiko, leading inwards, pachatangveditapovinyuhi, to be experienced individually by the wise. So santitiko, apparent here and now, akaliko, not a matter of time. And this is the way the Dhamma is always defined. It's like Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now. It's this, in the present there can be edification. In the present there can be true insight or vipassana. Now that's different than having intellectual or academic knowledge about something. So say, let's say the Buddha was born over 2,600 years ago in northern India. That's probably true. I can't prove it, but that, you know, archaeologists seem to think that's true. But that's not Dharma. That's information. That's knowledge. It's Buddhist knowledge. Fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But Dharma is really, it's the insightful seeing into the way things are, and that can only happen in the present moment. So we have a knowledge-based teaching. We have teachings around suffering and the cause of suffering and the realization of nirvana, and we have teachings around meditation and so on and so forth. And those knowledge teachings direct us, our attention, into the present moment. And it's by sustaining our awareness of the present moment that the knowledge becomes insight. And it's an insight where there's liberation. And all of us know the difference between having an idea about Buddhism or our own hearts or our own bodies or our own emotional states or whatever, and actually seeing something and actually, wow, that's how it works. And that is what changes the mind. And that's what we mean by the realization. So these three things I was talking about, purification, cultivation, realization. Realization comes by being present. Insight arises when we are available. And if we're not present, if I'm thinking about the past or the future, or I'm even just judging the present moment, I'm not really allowing the present moment to reveal itself, as it were, then there can be no edification, there can be no realization. So we train in these simple ways of body awareness to create the right kind of atmosphere where insight can arise. Hence the importance of being present to the way things are. The Being present to the way things are is not a requirement that we are in a particular mode, that we're happy or that we're inspired or that we love Buddhism or that we want to be here or that we enjoy being here or that we're kind, that we can be grumpy, we can hate Buddhism, we can wish we weren't here, but we can still know this is what it feels like to be grumpy and hate Buddhism and wish I wasn't here. That's presence. So presence is not a requirement of a certain, obviously it would be nicer if I enjoy being here and I love Buddhism and I was having angels whisper in my ears. But sometimes it's not that way. But presence is always possible. So the type of conditions I experience, well, sometimes yes, sometimes no, but presence is always possible. So if you make that the bottom line of your practice, if you make that the golden standard, then you're practicing refuge in Dharma. Akaliko, timeless, here and now. If, however, my idea of practice is that if I just keep beavering away at this, the insight will come tomorrow, then I'm already sort of projecting into the future, trying to get something called insight that I've read about or heard about or had, and I'm not really with the present moment. I'm reaching forward, trying to become something or trying to get rid of something. So it's a sort of sense of surrendering or opening up into the moment. And my suggestion has been to use listening as a way of establishing that. And when you listen, it's not just listening to sound, it's a metaphor for being receptive. And again, the language I like to use is receptive awareness, open attention, and rather than kind of grasping or striving. Where I suggest that's very interesting to watch in terms of the body is in the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the in-breath. The end of the out-breath, the beginning of the in-breath is a very interesting place where grasping takes place, striving takes place. It's a very interesting place to explore the present moment. So with these three ideas, purification, cultivation, realization, going back to the purification part, now if you can look at it in many ways. One is that you're just out of shape, you're not used to meditating, so things like dullness and sleepiness come into consciousness. So the idea of training with that. Or perhaps you have, like I've been noticing, I've been working with the muscles in my head for the last 6 months, and I just had a insight. I don't know if it's true or not, but I always wonder, why do I have all this kind of stress in my head? And I thought, well, I just think too much. All these years of meditation, it just sort of struck me this afternoon. I had 4 or 5 seizures when I was between the age late teens and early 20s, and I really whacked my head several times. I fell against a metal bedpost and I put my head through a window and cut my head. So it's kind of pretty rough on the old head. So maybe that's it. Well, I don't know, but anyway, that's something that is kind of deeply embedded in the muscle structure in my head. So I've just been practicing with my head in a kind of just letting the feelings come up into consciousness. So that's a kind of, I see that as a kind of purification of bodily trauma that's been held in the body. It might be that, but anyway, that's not something that's the same as just feeling slightly annoyed. So that would be different. Maybe if I go, I go to the kitchen and then someone kind of does something and I feel slightly annoyed, well, that would come up, maybe just very superficial, it would come up through my body, through my mind, a few memories, and it would go down again. So some things are very shallow, superficial. Some things can be very, very, very deeply held, can't they? And this is the brilliance of, I think, modern Western psychology, that we understand that. There's a lot of good teachings around that. So things like accidents, physical accidents, childhood traumas, childhood abuse, these kinds of things, or just childhood shocks that we've had, death. And these can be very, very deeply embedded, and sometimes you just have to be very patient. Just allow them to become conscious, allow them to be known. So purification takes place at many, many levels. Part of it is just a mind which is untrained or dull from a lot of work. Part of it a body which has held a lot of trauma and many things. But whatever it is, whether it's great or small, I think awareness of the body is a tremendously informative arena, forum, place where you can really understand all of that and transform that. Many people ask me, well, what's the difference between repression and indulgence? Aren't I repressing things? Well, at the body, I've never had any doubt at the body level. The thought level, maybe. Like someone was asking, Pirita, you were asking about forgiveness, right? And we were just talking about, well, what if people are irresponsible? Do you forgive them or whatever? Well, if I hold hatred, there's no doubt in my body what the holding of hatred is. There's no doubt at all. It's just, I just know it for sure. So if it's a social issue, say, around forgiveness, well, one has to be careful, one has to be streetwise. One can't forget if people are consistently abusive or whatever. One can't forget that. But if I hold hatred and resentment in my body, then I know that's attachment. And that, for me, there's no real doubt there about what repression is and what holding is and what indulgence is. It's quite clear because it's felt in the body. So if one learns, well, what does an open-hearted body feel like? What do I feel like when I'm at ease? What do I feel like when I'm relating to humanity in a kind and generous way? And then what's the other? When I'm feeling really protected because someone at work is just nasty and I just have to endure it. And what does that feel like? And what do I feel like when a memory of resentment comes up, when I've been betrayed or whatever? What is that like? And it through the body, it's very, very obvious. It's very obvious what that does to the body. And then, so body awareness is a kind of information system. Very, very helpful. And then you don't have to go into thought. You don't have to analyze it. You don't have to figure out, is this repression? Is this indulgence? It's the body. So this body sweeping that we did, where I first went through the sensorium, I brought your attention to the eyes, to the brain, to the ears. There's a lot. We take in a lot of information. We take information through the senses, don't we? The tactile, the body, and becoming aware of all that, becoming more and more, allowing our attention to dwell in the body, then informs us of contractions which are taking place right now, or contractions which have come from just being embedded in the body. Very informative. So there's wisdom in the body. Sometimes thought isn't so wise. You notice that? You notice how I always say, who's the biggest liar you've known? Isn't it the guy between your ears? These are the times where you've got caught up with self-disparagement or whatever, or been afraid and nothing had really happened. So sometimes thought's all not all that clever. We think it's clever. Sometimes it's clever. But the body, the body has this sort of wisdom about it, because you know when you feel contracted. So my suggestion then, in terms of purification and liberating a lot of these habits that we unfortunately kind of carry around, is to train in body awareness. So the combination of purification by training in body awareness. So cultivate body awareness. You can do that by sweeping through the body. Do that. Then you might find some area of the body which feels really quite locked. And then you can just allow attention to dwell there. If you are sweeping through the body and you're trying too hard, If you sweat through the face and you're trying too hard, your eyes will tighten up, won't they? So as you have awareness around the head, the temples, the eyes, and all that, and you try too hard, you notice it in the body. So the body has this kind of, it's like a feedback loop. It keeps re-informing you about what's going on. But if you never have any body awareness, if the mind is always just thinking, you know, you're just analyzing, thinking, processing in that way, then one loses the sensitivity to the body, and then that information is lost to us. It's not available. Every now and then we notice things, but the kind of refined feedback information which is available isn't available because we don't have enough body awareness. Awareness of the breath channel is very informative. So I just briefly suggested, notice your throat. What's the amplitude of the throat? How do you breathe? And you know, is it contracted, or is it nice and open when you breathe? What about the heart? The center of the chest, the heart area, not just the pump on the left side, but right at the center, the heart chakra. That's a very, very alive area. What is that like? And what is it like when you breathe there? And what is the hara like? What is the base of your breath like? Now, if one spends some time dwelling on that and learning about that by just being aware of it, then that's also very informative, because you learn about fear, about love, about anxiety, it's all held in the breath. And you can see the patterns of contraction and holding and ego that come up by noticing the breath. So some amount of just deep breathing is very good, where you just really learn how to breathe very deeply, and you really relax the out-breaths. You get a feeling of a nice deep breath. What does that feel like? And then you'll find, if you're starting to think anxious thoughts about the future, which is a habit that we have, you'll feel it in your breath, you'll feel it in your head, you'll feel it in your temples, you'll feel it in your eyes. You have all this lovely information which is telling you something's going on here. If, however, one just lives in the thinking realm, then you tend to be a victim to that. Thoughts are right, thoughts very useful, but thought which is driven by a negative habit is very destructive, because it just perpetuates negative habit. We all know that. So the usefulness of negative thinking is as symptom. And I suggest then during the retreat, really practice inner listening. Listening to your thoughts, huh? And then noticing, well, what kind of an atmosphere or mood or tendency is that, are those inner thoughts indicating, rather than just a particular storyline or scenario. So are the thoughts one of upliftment, or are they one of self-disparagement? Is your mind very judgmental about people around you? Or are you comparing yourself? Or are you anxious about what people think about you, or whatever it is? What is the inner language telling you about the mood of the mind, the tone of the mind, not simply what the particular instant it is? There's a difference. There's a difference. I can feel maybe critical about people around me and believe in that criticism, or say I shouldn't be thinking that criticism, or I can know, oh, this is the critical mind. And then connect that to the body. Connect that to a body which has some sense of tension in it. And then learn how to relax the body. Vice versa, when you feel really open, you know, when there's some moment in the retreat or some period in the retreat, your meditation is very relaxed. You're just appreciating the beauty of the light outside, the space of the river, the beautiful white pines, whatever it might be, or just that someone is very generous to you and you feel the gesture of kindness and you feel open. Well, what's that like? And what's the body feel like that? How's that? They're kind of connecting mind and body rather than these kind of living in sort of separate fears. Because they are one unit, aren't they? Mind affects body, body affects mind. So if I'm holding my belly in anxiety, and I've done that for maybe 20 or plus years, that's going to affect the way I relate to people. Relax my belly, relax more with people. So there is a lot to be learned about ourselves through body awareness. And the beauty of it is it's not based on a desire to get rid of anything. Hopefully, if you just try to get rid of your problems by noticing the body already, you'll be tense. But your body will show you that. It's the brilliance of the body. So it's a kind of really wise space there. And so this is wisdom. Wisdom is a kind of natural function of consciousness if we get out of the way, I think. Yeah? Quite often that's the problem. I remember when I went to New Zealand, I said, Ajahn Sumedho, what should I do? He said, get out of the way. Oh, okay. What does that mean? But you see, when if I get out of the way and I stop analyzing and saying what is right and what is wrong, and I just pay attention, stay in the present moment, sustain present moment awareness, the wisdom arises, insights arise. And there's realization of the way things are. The realizations, you kind of expect realizations, you're going to get the kind of the super anatta realization, right? Not self-realization, you're all read about it. And your mind would just become one, all that. And then so you look for bigger things than are there. But just the little things, just the subtle things, are kind of an ongoing information system that is available to us. So I really suggest learning about your body, connecting thought to body rather than thought to thought, moving away from the inner warfare of thought, which we all have, so you notice that you're thinking and then you say you shouldn't stop thinking and you think, why am I thinking like that? And then, am I thinking too much? And then you start doubting, is this? And it's just thought. It's just this endless circle of thought. Whereas if you say, oh, this is thought. And how's my body now with that kind of thought? So you can use a thought, you can drop a thought in, but then let go. And what's really important is learn to actually be aware of the sensations in the body rather than the analysis of the, like you can kind of notice the body but be thinking, but actually to really touch the body, to touch the sensation of breath, to touch the sensation of pressure or tension, all of that, very, very important. So that's when you do breath meditation, say, just can you really just feel where the breath is touching you as a sensation, not as a thought? And that kind of training becomes more and more profound. Doesn't seem like much just to notice your posture, or to notice your shoulders, but that builds a kind of strength of body awareness, and then from that you get an understanding of your own body. Whatever comes up now, I would suggest you try to see it as a flow of conscious events rather than narratives. What I mean by that is, for instance, let's say tomorrow something happens and you feel terribly disappointed. Maybe I say something dumb and you think, how can you, 30 years? Or you know, you're the last in line and you don't get a cake. Or it's too hot in the room, or the person in the other room is snoring, or the water pipes are smashing, blah, 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 and the mind starts to complain. It feels disappointed. Can you notice that as a mood in the mind rather than as a reality which you have to address by going to Arslan? Arslan, the pipes are too loud. Yes, okay, Arslan. So one of the things that our training, say, as monastics is content with little. So you've got enough here, by the way. You've got incredible food, right? So you got incredible food. So you look at the food and say, yeah, but I wanted, I want milk on my porridge. That's discontent, right? What does that feel like? or I want hotter coffee, I don't know, you know, whatever your mind does, oh, this is what discontent feels like. I mean, it's pretty hard to be discontent with this food, so. But just like really train the mind in being content with little, this is renunciation. So we have the roof overhead, we have good shelter, we have a good situation, we have good people, right? But your critical mind probably will find some little bit. So we'll find fault somewhere. Maybe they'll just focus on you. Right? But that's the critical mind. Can you see that as a mood of the mind rather than an ultimate truth? Right? And so when you train with contentment with little, it's called santiti in the Pali. In Sinhala they have a woman's name is Santoshini, which comes from santiti, one who is content with little. That brings a lot of peace to the mind. So we are trained, say the way we're trained as monastics is we're given food, and then when we look at the food, we try to reflect on the goodness of those who have prepared the food. We chant blessings to express our gratitude, and then we look at the food. And we reflect, this is food, this is medicine to take us through to the next day so we can practice. And then we watch any preferences we might have, any discontent we might have around the food. And we let go of that and we cultivate contentment. Our living space, the people we're with, the environment and all that, this is good enough. It's good enough to practice. So then the discontented mind, the mind which complains, the mind which always compares, the mind which is always judging, the mind which is never satisfied, which is never at ease with the way things are, that we begin to notice as a type of mind state. And then if you look at that, the judging mind, the critical mind, it's a tension in the body. The anxious mind, it's a tension in the body. The mind at ease. This is the way it is now, accepting and open. Is a mind at ease, is a body at ease. You need to realize that. So Buddhist practice, as we've been trained as monastics, is not just kind of watching your breath for 30 years. Can you imagine? Somehow, you know, if I just watch my breath for 30 years, I'll be enlightened. Totally crazy. But rather, there's a whole array of tools that the Buddha offered as a way of cultivating spiritual life. So what have I suggested? Ways of upliftment. So suggesting using like a mantra or using images of peace or serenity, bringing that forth, goodness, wholesomeness, bringing forth optimism. When I see a Buddha image, I remember that the Buddha got enlightened. He said, I could do it, roughly speaking. I heard the Buddha last night, right? But in that sense that there is a spiritual goal, that beings have realized that, and we can do it. Now, that is very healthy to think that way. The other way of thinking, oh God, another 60 million lifetimes. I'll never get anywhere, I'm not getting anywhere. That gets you depressed. You can't keep going. So spiritual optimism, beauty. So I'm suggesting, how do you do that in your practice? How do you bring forth those images? You don't have to do a Buddhist way. Use what you want, right? But can you bring forth those kinds of images? So that's more than just watching your breath, isn't it? So then I suggested kindness. Really work on your, really look at the attitudes you have to your own practice, to your own mind, to your own body. Are they ones of kindness? Is there a self-respect there? Or is there this kind of nagging judge always, didn't get it right, didn't get it right, didn't get it right? Then don't believe those. Don't go there. It'll come up. Say, yeah, I'm not going there. But come to a sense of self-respect and may I be well. May I be free. That's my intention. May I be happy. Bring that into the mind. Contentment with little. You know, cultivate that. Very important. Just being good enough. Don't go for the upgrade. just, this is good enough, it's good enough this way. Yeah. And then that, all of those things help. And then when you watch the breath, you know, when you watch the breath, you're aware of the body, all that's clicking into place. It's not just simply some technique, there's a whole array of things that you're doing. So what we're doing on a retreat in life, really, we're creating this foundation for enlightenment, putting all these factors together so that the mind has all the right characteristics for liberation. All right, I'll leave that for your reflection tonight. There's also a tradition which Ajahn Kusala will lead of expressing gratitude for teaching. And so Ajahn Kusala will chant it. You want to explain that?
Yeah, it's easy for me rather than him.
I'm a bit embarrassed.
Because for me, in some ways, it is an expression of gratitude for specific teachings, but it's not like holding up scorecards, give him a 7 or give him a 9. Or because I do the little Pali formula, and what we all do together, just to finish that, is we all say sadhu 3 times, and there's different ways that is translated. It's kind of like, it's maybe a Pali equivalent of amen, or it is well, or something like that. And it's more a reflection of the gratitude is that we have the opportunity to be in a Dhamma environment, to hear the Buddha's teachings, to have the time and the space and the inclination to reflect in this way, whether or not it's amazingly packaged, but just that we can do this, and that Ajahn Brahmo is willing to lead us with that. So it's
page
70.
Yeah. Great book.
So I do the first little bit, and you can close with the sadhu. Yeah? Anmayang avara damagata sadhu karanga damase sadhu 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 anumodami.
We finish with a chant, but just a suggestion. When you wake up tomorrow, can you check out your heart? See if you're still alive. But just check out where your heart is. What's the mood of the mind? Bodhicitta? So there'll be thought, maybe. But what's the attitude? What's the mood? What have you come out of? What kind of dream states have you come out of? You don't have to analyze the dreams. You can if you like. But what's the mood of the mind there? Is it wholesome? Is it unwholesome? Is it bright? Is it dark? If it's dark, don't go there. Come to the light. Huh? Look outside and lift your mind out of the darkness. Sometimes in deep, when people are aware through deep sleep, they are very connected to a deeply loving feeling in the heart. So sometimes when you come out of sleep, you touch that too. Check out your heart. So if it's negative, what are the thoughts? Right? So you're establishing mindfulness right from the moment, right? What's it like if it's, another day, that kind of thing? Don't go there. Come back to your heart and bring light in. Save you a lot of work in the morning sitting. Okay, let's finish with the chant. 28. Chant Buddha's words on loving kindness. Okay. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited,
contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Finish with a closing homage.
Arahaṁ sammā sambuddho bhagavā. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, Buddhaṁ bhagavān tāṁ abhivādemi. I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Sawakato Bhagavata Dhammo, the teaching so completely explained by him, Dhamma Namasami, I bow to the Dhamma.
Supatipanno
Bhagavato Savaka Sangho, the blessed ones, disciples who have practiced well.